previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
Ladies and gentlemen, we can't tell you why Jeffrey McDonald killed his pregnant wife and children, but we have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that he did kill them. And that is what is important. Why? May never be known.
It's an all Felicity and all brothers and sisters episode of The Blotter Presents. As Noel Crane takes his turn as Jeffrey McDonald in Final Vision, and Ben Covington is a demolitions expert, you heard me, in TV movie Murder in a College Town. In related news, someone murdered my erstwhile guest's internet, but in the meantime, this is The Blotter Presents, episode 35. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Blotter Presents, previously.tv's take on televised true crime. I'm your host, Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm here with the notes of John Ramos, who, as we began recording this earlier today, had a Time Warner cable attack and was obliged to drive to a Starbucks and email me his notes so that I could proceed. I was super excited to have John as my guest, for various reasons, not least because we are both big fans, or whatever, well-versed, let's leave it there, in Felicity and the actors on Felicity. So I thought that when Final Vision was announced, starring Scott Foley, a.k.a. Noel Crane, he would be the perfect person to come on and talk about it with me. Also, the subject, putatively, of Final Vision, Jeffrey McDonald, is a fellow alum of our university, and if there's anything our university does well, it's crooks. But hopefully I can muddle along with some of John's notes via email. Let's get into it, our most wanted section. This is, of course, Investigation Discovery's Final Vision, the two-hour take on Joe McGinnis's take on the murders at Fort Bragg in 1970. Here's our case synopsis. In February of 1970, Captain Jeffrey McDonald's pregnant wife and two small daughters were brutally murdered. McDonald's story is that a group of Manson hippies did it. Everyone else's story is that McDonald did it, including the most famous version of that story, Joe McGinnis's fatal vision. The case has preoccupied me and many others for decades, because Felicity has preoccupied me and maybe four others for almost two decades, ! I was going to make one of those others. John Ramos joined me in assessing Noel Crane's turn as McDonald, with an assist in this foresighting by Brothers and Sisters' adorable Dave Annable as Joe McGinnis. I did not hate this, but I am not sure who it is for, starting with some, what seemed to me, someone who is quite well-versed in the case, like some fairly clumsy lead-in exposition in clip two.
Okay, so what do you know?
There was a tragedy. You lost your wife and kids. The army accuses you of the crime, then they change their minds. They clear you, you get an honorable discharge, and now somehow after 9 years, you're being dragged back to North Carolina to stand trial in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's about right.
So after 9 years, why is this coming back around?
John's note here is that Dave Annable, who you heard as McGinnis in that clip, is kind of a non-presence here. I agree. I think he's good, but I also think that maybe sort of framing this story in a two-hour movie that's basically a take on McGinnis's journey from not really understanding how Jeffrey McDonald was still having to go through these trials, figurative and literal, after the murders of his family, and, you know, whatever happened to due process and so on and so forth. Why did this case take 9 years to come to trial? going from that point and from sympathizing with him and relating to him and believing him to not believing him, thinking he did it, thinking he's a sociopath, thinking that he was manipulated, and so on. On the page, this evolution, you know, McGinnis is not the most mellifluous prose stylist, or wasn't. He passed away a couple years ago. May he rest. But he does a good job in Fatal Vision. And in his, I think it was a Kindle single called Final Vision, which was, it came out like 5 years ago, and was a, just sort of last, attempt to put his involvement with this case in the ground. I'm not sure that worked. Of course, the McDonald case and its appeals continue, but, I'm not sure that this, intellectual or emotional, like, journey of belief or understanding can necessarily be effectively televised under the circumstances. And the circumstances are, first of all, their attempts to indicate what year it is. First of all, everyone is just smoking constantly and using clunky old phones with bells in them. Like, okay, we get it. But also people are wearing terrible, terrible beaver pelts, as John put it in his notes. I think that Annabelle's hair is real and is just parted creatively. But Scott Foley definitely has a rug on, at least in the early going. He bends down to tend to a patient and it just arches up off his neck. It's unfortunate. Overall, I will say this next clip is not necessarily a great indicator. I have read, and I will put some of these in the show notes, including a link to Foley saying that he's not sure McDonald is guilty. Like, give me a break, everyone, including McDonald. You did it. But he, I mean, it's just clickbait, but he apparently studied quite extensively McDonald's speech patterns, and the results are mixed. I feel like he didn't always remember to deliver his lines in that kind of imperiously nasal way. But let's listen to clip three, because another issue with this narrative, of course, is that maybe I've just read too much about this case. But McDonald's account of what must have happened is ludicrous. And even if, as a visual narrative, you are trying to be cagey about whose side you're on, it's really not possible to make this anything but laughable. So here's clip three.
One of the girls had wet my side of the bed. It was late. I thought it'd be easier to sleep in the living room and change the sheets.
Jeff, why are they doing this to me?
Acid is groovy. Kill the pigs.
Daddy!
Acid and rain.
Daddy! I mean, acid and rain. Like, are you selling finesse conditioner? This is, I mean, it's just not possible to render it believably, because it's not believable, because that's not what happened. He killed them. You know, whatever, sure, at me. I agree that due process was not observed, and perhaps on the letter of the law, they were a little too attentive to the difference between the Article 32 hearing and an actual trial, whatever. Like, I agree it took too long to do. But you still did it. Here's another thing that the production is guilty of. This case has been in basically an active posture for nearly 50 years. There's a lot of information, and it's, I will, certainly admit, difficult to know what you ought to include and what is just going to be sort of irrelevant. like it's an interesting eyebrow raising fact, but not necessarily pertinent. It just confuses matters. And I thought that this production did a pretty good job of keeping that kind of extraneous, let's just get all our research in there stuff under control. But they were all like, it's a lot of information. And some of it was being stuffed in ways that felt not first drafty exactly, but like they needed to go back and read where they were in the actual narrative since they were probably shooting out of order. Here's a very strange act out in clip 4.
I was probably in shock. I didn't realize it at the time, but when they examined me later at the hospital, one of my lungs was partially collapsed. You know, Colette was pregnant.
That was not me clipping that weird ending. That was the scene weirdly ending. I assume I took that from a screener. I don't know what actually aired. Again, you can hit me up on Twitter at Blotter Presents or on our forums at previously.tv/forums. I'm very interested to know what you guys thought of this. First of all, of course, McGinnis knows that it was like top line in all the coverage of the case. And it had been from the beginning. She was not like barely pregnant. She was visibly pregnant. And also, what is that act out? And why, like, why were we shown this? What are we supposed to take from it? That McDonald is a, you know, accomplished actor, that this is something that John mentioned was the scene in the frat house where they're playing poker. This is a pretty, not cliched, but just sort of pro forma way to indicate that a character is or is not good at lying. I wasn't sure what to take from that scene. And John was like, just because the scene is there, I think that's what we're supposed to take from it. But it's still a little bit like, in a case with this much material, why is that there? I also was not 100% on this could have happened, but McGinnis has always expressed great respect for Wade Smith, so I'm not clear on why this is here or why we need a repeat of the scene with his agent, played by my queen and yours, Carolyn Aaron, about McGinnis coasting on the selling of the president. It could be in there so that John Doman, who is wearing the worst wig of them all, why? You can also see that on our Twitter account at Blotter Presents. I'm not sure why this scene is in here, except to underline the idea that everyone on the defense team believes that McGinnis is there to basically carry McDonald's water with his version of the story. There's also a couple of scenes where McGinnis is in motion meetings in chambers that he wouldn't be in, but I don't know. This is a lot of story to get your arms around. I get that there are difficulties, but there's some pacing issues. Let's hear clip 5.
Is there a problem with me, Wade?
Actually, yes, there is. You see, I'm trying to keep my client out of jail, and you... See, when Jeff looks at you, he sees someone who can save his image. But when I look at you, I see someone who's been dining out in the same success for the last 10 years. Someone who's only interested in Joe McGinnis's next bestseller.
Can't it be both, Wade?
Wade, take it easy. Joe's on our side. Right, Joe?
Right, Bernie. Yeah, the wig is awful. You'll be able to see that and Bernie Siegel and Jeffrey McDonald's actual 70s hair by following us on Twitter at Blotter Presents. Yeah, I think maybe the real problem with Final Vision is that it misses the... It starts to get at the like continuing compelling quality of Jeffrey McDonald, which is that finely tuned reflex machine that makes up a sociopath. We'll get to that reference in a second. But I think what they miss in both what they show of the trial and of the state's cross-examination of McDonald and of scenes like between McDonald and his defense team is this enormous, like, self-regard, self-pity, the petulance. McDonald was an extremely off-putting witness in his own defense. I don't think that's what got him convicted, but it did not help. And certainly in the book, you're given, you see transcripts of tapes that he sent to McGinnis. You see, you read his own accounts of certain things, and just McGinnis is not a fan of him as a, like, social or emotional creature. And he's like, I mean, he's a douche. Like, McGinnis has that line about, like, you know, the condo is great once you got used to all the mirrors. Like, that's McDonald for you. And I think that this particular narrative, Final Vision, does not do a great job of evolving that image that the reader or the viewer has of McDonald at first as this, you know, beleaguered widow and or widower and, you know, victim of a horrible crime in which his entire family was obliterated, and then slowly dropping some breadcrumbs about his, you know, infidelities, his like the amphetamines. That's, I think that's a valid explanation, but it's not really, it's hard to do this elegantly on screen in, you know, 2 televised hours with commercials. So I think that that's the fundamental problem, is that we're being told and not shown. And that's just a problem with this story in this medium. It's certainly not for lack of effort. The next clip we're about to hear was genuinely bracing. Both John and I agreed. Let's hear it.
That was rough today.
It was a pretty brutal rebuttal of your whole story.
I don't have a story. It's what happened. It's the truth.
It's hard to get from that clip, especially since he's, like, very deliberately cracking and eating nuts. It's just not necessarily helping the seriousness with which we should take this, but Dave Annable looks legit frightened by McDonald in this scene. And but I also think that this is kind of like a by numbers portrayal of someone who's supposed to be either in denial about what actually happened or a psychopath. And, you know, he's just sitting in the dark having a snack, expressionless. Like, I don't know how else you get that work done, but this just felt a little, it just felt a little shortcutty and not all that effective. Everyone in the scene is trying, but for whatever reason, the writing is not helping. And in the end, once again, we are told and not shown. McGinnis is trying to get access to some notes that psychiatrists took after the crimes and after various lie detector tests were taken and so on and so forth. The psychiatrist can't do that, but he recommends a text by Herv Kleckley, I believe his name is. And I have quoted this text many times in reference to this case, that the sociopath is not an actual personality, but a finely tuned reflex machine that is able to mimic human behavior. I mean, it's an excellent and apt description, but it's much more effective in a, you know, read narrative in a book than it is, you know, watching Dave Annable read it aloud to his wife in bed from a copy that someone found on half.com. But let's hear the clip.
This is But someone with a psychopathic personality at first seems totally normal, but the more time you spend with them, there's nothing in there. It's like learned responses. There's not a real human being inside.
Does that describe Jeffrey McDonald?
This poor woman playing the wife. Yes, it does, honey. So, yeah, once again, we're left with who was this for? Because I don't think that this was necessarily a great, like, jumping off point. I'm not sure who would watch this and be like, having never heard of the case, would be like, huh, I'm going to look into that more, which is too bad because Fatal Vision is a classic in the genre. We have covered the original miniseries on, I believe, episode 3. I know my guest was Leah Kwan. We'll link it in the show notes. It's a great story. Like, all the aspects of it are a great story. The fact that McDonald sued McGinnis for breach of contract because McDonald felt that he was going to get, you know, gold blown up his culo by this book, and that it would help his image, and it very much did not. And then Janet Malcolm has been dining out on her, you know, the journalist and the murderer pieces, which were also turned into a book, for years. Those are very well written, although I almost violently disagree with the disingenuity of her premise. This is a great story, and if people get interested in it, I think that's a good thing for the genre and for talking about how the law is applied for various people, you know, white people versus people of color, people of means versus people of no means. I don't think that's irrelevant. You know, in terms of the larger, like, some of the, you know, reasons that we interact with this genre are not the most noble, but they can prompt really interesting and worthwhile conversations. But this movie just kind of felt like, okay, like, we have the rights to this and we have these actors associated with it. And, you know, like, but what a waste of John Doman. And what a waste of Carolyn Aaron. And what a waste of the real story, which I see what they were trying to do, but I don't know who it's for. And I'm not sure that it was ever going to be possible to do. So we'll put a link. I think it is on the Investigation Discovery site. We'll put a link, but I can't tell you to rush out and watch it, unfortunately. All right, moving along then to our much more hilarious cold case. In keeping with our theme, I tried and tried and tried. It took like a day and a half. I tried to find a cold case property, a TV, like, movie about a crime starring someone else from Felicity. I succeeded. Sort of. We will be discussing Murder in a College Town, which is often known as What Happened to Bobby Earle. That is how you will find it on YouTube, and we will link to that in the show notes. Here is the case synopsis. A derpy small town boy heads to university armed with permanent pressed pants and platitudes about them college types, falls in with a feloniously grasping crowd, and gets killed by Gossip Girl's Rufus after telling cops about the arson they participated in with help from Ben Covington of Felicity, which is weird because Ben is like 15 in this movie. This is based on the real-life murder of Butch Pratt, and really only the names have been changed, as well as the nationalities of those involved, since almost everyone in this interminable but hilarious joint is Canadian, except Kate Jackson, who plays Bobby Earle's mom. This movie is not good. And it's not just because we are treated to long scenes in which Kate Jackson is being folksy for no apparent narrative propulsion reason. Let's hear clip 8.
Go on, Mom. We packed everything I own.
You're not going to be able to ask me to find a sweater for you when you're up there.
Greenville's 90 miles north of here.
Sweetheart, it's 90 miles north colder. Trust me. Now, look. That box has got all your flannel shirts in it, and your new gray slacks are in there. They're permanent press, so you won't have to iron them. But keep them nice for special occasions, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
Slacks. Okay, so off Bobby Earl goes to college, gawping all the way. This gentleman has exactly one facial expression. It is derpy. He's sort of a poor man's Matt Dillon. And yes, I know the poor man's Matt Dillon is Kevin Dillon. He's like an even poorer man's Matt Dillon. And just the derpy, like there's one point at which he like goes into a fraternity brother's room and is like marveling at the armchair and at the beer. Like he's sitting in an armchair with a beer and it's like, are you from space? Like I like an armchair and a beer too. Don't get me wrong, but geez. But it seems like the people around him have to tell Bobby a lot about the way the world works. Clip 9.
Dero, yeah. You know it's frat rush tonight. Why don't you drop by Beta Mu? I don't know, man. What good's a frat gonna do me? Are you kidding? The food alone makes it worth it. Come on, man. They got a great house. You make a lot of good contacts. That's how you get ahead.
Oh, is that what frats are all about? Delicious food and contacts. I don't think so. Anyway, he meets Rufus from Gossip Girl, Matthew Settle, who has a older girlfriend whose hair is, this movie came out in the 90s. This hair is very late 80s tarantula about to attack. You can see it on our Twitter account. It is glorious. So she is like running some doctor's local businesses, but she's also running Rufus from Gossip Girl. John's note on this is that Matthew Settle is actually kind of a bright spot in this, but unfortunately he's acting opposite a derpy block of wood. And the fact is this story could have been interesting, but it is like built in a disorganized fashion. And the central character is, you know, Log until he goes missing. Spoiler. Anyway, this is how he starts to get into trouble when Tom, played by Matthew Settle, tries to convince him to take part in a series of burglaries, which won't really hurt anyone. Clip 10.
Stealing. Not stealing. That's when the guy you take from gets hosed. At the dean's office, I've seen the insurance policies these houses carry. Anything disappears, the brothers make a claim, they get it back in spades. They can even improve their equipment. Fat cat insurance companies pick up the tab. Everybody wins. Nobody is going to get hurt. But it's wrong, Tom.
But it's wrong, Tom. Their relationship is weird. Also, not for nothing, but fat cat insurance companies. Like, some of this dialogue is really strange. Bobby Earl participates in the burglary, but then he feels super guilty about it, and they totally almost get caught. They do eventually get kicked out of their fraternity, possibly because Tom installed an extremely large chunk of wood in the common room, known as Bobby. But Bobby goes home for break, and folksy Kate Jackson is literally no help. Clip 11.
Have you ever had a problem so big you didn't know what to do about it?
Yeah. Yeah, when your dad and I got divorced. You boys were so young. There were so many bills and worries. I didn't have any idea what I was going to do. But I didn't want to end up like your grandma, washing floors. So I went to nursing school because I knew if I could get my degree, we'd at least have a chance. You know, it's hard if you're reaching for something that nobody around you's ever reached for before. But you'll make it. I mean, I did. And you're gonna go much, much farther than me.
I love you, Mom.
You'll be okay. Bye-bye.
What? As John put in his notes, "Hark, my beloved son is acting out of character due to a problem that's completely overwhelmed him. Sounds like none of my business. Bye." And where is she going as she leaves the room? If you guessed bowling, you get no dollars because folksy. Oh, God. Like, why even ask? Why tell him your life story, which he already knows because he's your kid? Eh? And then, I don't know, like, she's cast as this super committed mom who won't give up until she finds his body in a field where he's been hurled because he refused to take part in the arson that they were planning to burn down some warehouse, insurance, MacGuffin, blah, 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 fish cakes. This arson is planned by an engineering student played by Speedy himself, Clip 12.
Hey, big brother. Steven's an engineering student. He knows all about controlled fires, pyrotechnics.
All right, look, we'll use an accelerant, all right? Something like you can find in a furniture warehouse, something like varnish or turpentine, stuff like that. It's loaded with alcohol, right? So it'll burn fast, it'll burn hot. We can spread it along the electrical systems and make it look like the wiring started it.
The warehouse must burn completely to the ground. No mistakes.
We can do that.
And we never see him again. That was a lot of garbage to go through for. Not much Speedy, but yeah, there's still an hour of this to go. And just wait until Kate Jackson's folksy horror when Bobby does finally graduate from university and is given a gun by his besties, Tom and Chelsea, in Cliff 13.
It's a beauty.
What the hell is that? What the hell kind of gift is that to give to a college graduate?
Mom, please. It's okay. It's just for protection. You know, we transport a lot of cash between Dr. Lander's businesses, and sometimes you need a gun. That's all.
Criminals need a gun. Criminals and the police need a gun. You're not either one, are you?
Of course not.
Chelsea, if Dr. Lander's money is so dangerous to move around, why don't you just find someone else to do it?
And why don't you just stop treating your son like a slow five-year-old? I realize that's what the actor's giving you in this and every other scene. But still, I mean, you're not a cop or a criminal, are you? What is that? Oh, God, it's bad. Anyway, he doesn't participate in the arson, but he does tell the cops about it because stealing is wrong and he feels bad. And then he is rooked into taking a ride into the country, marooned there in what looks like a prank, but is actually some like prospective old girlfriend of his setting him up so that Rufus from Gossip Girl could beat him to death. And then it takes them a really long time to find his body, but eventually they find it despite Chelsea's confidence that folksy Kate Jackson bought their story about how he, I don't know, went to log school. Clip 14.
They bought it.
Shut up, Chelsea.
Preach, Rufus from Gossip Girl. Yeah, so eventually they find him, and then there's a long sequence after the kid has gone missing about how he used to have a bone disease. And then there's a scene, a couple of scenes between folksy Kate Jackson and Log's brother about how he always knew that Log was her favorite, and she's like, not really, he just needed me more, and you were always the reliable one, and thanks for not dying, and do you want a steak dinner with scalloped potatoes? Like, who pronounces it like that? And then there's another flashback to dead Bobby relearning to walk using baseball bats as crutches. And then the happy flute is happy, but also a little sad because dead Bobby is dead. And that's the end. It's bad. Like, we'll link to it in the show notes, but like, shut up, Chelsea. Indeed. It's dreadful. If anyone knows of a book or a long form article about this case, once again, Butch Pratt, Northern Ohio, Western PA. I think his body was discovered in 1988, but he had been missing for some time. So we're talking about 86, 87. We'd also love to hear from you on the forums if you know anything about the case or have seen this hilarious movie starring Ben Covington, demolitions expert. I'm a little sorry that nobody in the scene was named Javier. I'm definitely sorry that John could not join me for this episode. I really missed his comments. I tried to get all of his notes in here, but I'm sure I failed. They'll always exist in my heart. This is the point at which our guest would usually plug something that he or she is working on. John and I have a podcast together about the show Veronica Mars. It's called Go Pirates, and I think I'm also going to have to do an episode of that by myself this week because Time Warner Cable hates us both. But we have a good time, and if you liked that show, you might have a good time listening to it too. Once again, it's called Go Pirates. You can follow that on Twitter at Go Pirates Pod. Coming up on The Blotter Presents, we'll have Crime Writers On's Kevin Flynn on The Family I Had, and then I'll be looking back at the best TV true crime properties of 2017. I urge you to tell me what your favorites were. You can find a thread on that on our forums at previously.tv/forums. You can tweet directly at me. I'm Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm at Tomato Nation. Or you can tweet at The Blotter Presents Twitter account. You've heard it a whole bunch of times on this podcast, but trust me, the pictures are going to be so worth it this week. Please follow us at Blotter Presents. That's on both Twitter and Facebook. And I am sorry that I could not furnish my guest, but thank you so much for going on this journey with me all by myself. This has been The Blotter Presents, and we will talk to you next time.
Been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.